It started in 2010 when I left my career in IT at Canadian Tire head office downtown Toronto. It was a great, great job. But at the same time, music was just really pulling at my heart. And so I decided to let go of the solid career. And I went to music full time. I mean, I've been doing it part time before then, a weekend here, a weekend there. But I decided to go full time. And so now I'm suddenly left without a paycheck. I scrambled, like you talking about getting your job in radio, right? I scrambled, I hustled for the work. And because I lived in Bolton, that's how come I kind of zeroed in on the Orangeville and Dufferin County area. I used to play the Mad Hatter. Where else? This was a Black Birch restaurant on Hockley Valley Road. Finn McCool's Orangeville. It was one of my early clients. Recently, Thistle and Rose, where you saw me at.
Yeah, that's a great show. Cool. So you've certainly made something of yourself as a local musician, at least in Dufferin County. But like talk to me about how did you start with music and what inspired you to be a musician?
Well, as a boy, I was always singing around the house. I loved music so much that my parents even got me piano lessons, which was a real stretch for them because at that time, money was pretty tight. Four kids. But they got me piano lessons because they thought I would enjoy it. And I clearly remember sitting on the bench as a, what was that? Must have been 10, looking at the dots on the lines and music. And after the third lesson, I went to my mom and I said, "Mom, I don't like them." And she went, "What?" But I guess they were kind of relieved because it was probably expensive,
For
piano
sure.
lessons, right? So, but I still love to sing around the house. And then I went to high school in Brazil,
Wow.
an American high school in Brazil, a private American high school, because my dad's work took him and the family down to Brazil
Okay.
in 1973. I was 14. And what I noticed was everybody and his mother had a guitar in the school. And these were not cheap guitars. Like you get really great wood guitars. Because wood is such a primary export. So you get some really beautiful looking guitars down there, and everybody had one. So one of my high school buddies saw how much I loved to play and offered me to take his guitar home at night. And I would take it home after school and sit in my room for hours and hours with a book and taught myself how to play guitar. And my parents definitely noticed that, they'd have to call me for dinner. I'd eat dinner. I'd go right back into my room and just play again. So one Saturday morning, my dad bangs on my door, bam, bam, bam. And like, "Tom, wake up." He says, "What happened behind the couch?" And I thought, oh, geez, one of the kids banged a hole in the wall behind the couch. And I thought, oh, man, somebody's going to get in trouble. So I wander over and I look behind the couch and there was this big black thing and it was a guitar case. And they bought me a guitar, and
Oh,
I was
sweet.
beside myself. I was like,
That's
wow. So
amazing.
that's when it kind of started, the whole thing. And then, I played around and I noticed that people were always asking me to play, and they said, you're really good. So I think that's when I started to realize I've got a talent at this.
Right.
So I moved back to Canada at the age of 18 to study at McGill University, studying
Okay.
math and computer science.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, my parents wouldn't let me study music or theater arts. I mean, they
Yeah.
wanted,
That's funny.
understandable.
I was in the same boat. I was a musician growing up, and the parents were like, "We support you, but
But lucky us, we had to have parents who loved us and wanted us to have a good future, right?
Absolutely.
I went to study math and computer science. I absolutely did horrible, no surprise. And left that and still did a lot of music. And then just played in pubs in Montreal and then moved to Toronto in 1984. Again, part-time. But I was working jobs, right? And I told you I had a career in IT at Canadian Tire Home Office. And so, like I said, I saw other full-time musicians. I was meeting other full-time musicians. I was meeting other full-time artists as well. And that's when I started to go, maybe I can do this full-time. So, yeah, that's how it kind of
So
fast forwards to
when
me.
was that point where you said, "Okay, I'm going for this. I want to do this. I want to try to do this full time." Just like me, I wanted to do music full time too. It's my passion. It's that thing that always gives you that warm inside feeling, and you always want to pursue it and have it be your full time thing. And then I went to school, but I still wanted to play music. So I played in a band and we saved our money. We went and recorded music. We were doing the dream, but like it just kind of clicked one day. I was like, you know what? Instead of just thinking about doing it, let's do it. So yeah, I went back to just working and making money so I could meet the band. We could get together every week once or twice, jam, write songs. We went and recorded with a good producer and it was just kind of like, we really committed. So when for you was that moment you went, okay, I really want to, this is what I want to do. Music is something that I want to make sure that I pursue.
That's a great, great question. And I do have a specific moment when it happened.
Perfect, perfect.
It was some weekday evening while I was still at Canadian Tire. It was some weekday evening and I wanted to do some writing. But as it happened over and over and over again, something got in the way, right? It was something else that demanded my attention and I couldn't get any writing done. And I remember going into the office the very next morning, turning on my computer and seeing my reflection in the monitor as the computer booted up. And I saw it and I said, Tom, if you don't leave now and do music full time, you can kiss the dream goodbye. It's never going to happen as long as you're here at this desk. And that was the moment. I mean, it wasn't like I didn't walk out.
That minute, right? Yeah.
Yeah. But I was very methodical about it. And, right. You know, I spoke with a vice president of the company and I told him what I had in mind. And he said, Tom, if you'll remember, last summer I had a heart attack. And I almost went. So you got to do what you got to do. You never know when you're going right. to go. The music was really pulling at my heart. And it's like, you got to do it now while you still have the energy, you still have the get up and go. And so I did. I eventually left a few months later. And that's when I started to hustle for work as a full-time musician.
Right on. So tell me a little bit about that. So you make the decision, okay, I want to do music. How did you go about it? And how did you get to where you are today?
The first step was putting together a package and just starting to drive around Orangeville. And I think one of the first places I went to was the Mad Hatter. So anyways, I walk in and I hand it to the manager and he's standing there. He's looking at it and he's going, wow, I've never seen anything like this before. It was a very, you know, my years working in a professional setting in IT taught me professionalism.
Yes.
Taught me how to communicate and how to present myself. So when he was looking through it, he was like, wow, this is, you know, and without even listening to me, he just said, you're in,
wow.
You're in, let's get you in.
And you know, and you saying that, I can definitely, back that because the first time I saw you at the Thistle and Rose, you come around with your business card. It's got your name, your number, everything. That was professional. Your song list is huge. You've got a little bit of everything for everybody. And the way you interact with the crowd is incredible. So your show isn't not just you playing songs everyone wants to hear. It's you interacting with the crowd. It's much more of just not just live music. It's like entertainment in
exactly.
a way, right? And
exactly.
It really, I think that draws a whole bunch of more of a crowd than just standing and playing cover songs, right?
Exactly. In early 90s, I was in a band that was flown across the world to the Middle East, Bahrain, to perform for U.S. soldiers during Gulf War I.
Wow.
We were on a passenger ship, the Cunard Princess, that was docked in Manama, Bahrain, and we played there every night for 5 months. And every 3 days, we would get a fresh rotation of 900 soldiers to come on the ship. They were bussed in from Saudi Arabia to have 3 days of rest and recreation on the ship, right? So you can imagine the bar. They're not allowed to drink alcohol in the desert.
Oh, God.
So the bar was a pretty popular destination, and that's where we played in the
okay.
bar. So 1 week after we were there, the entertainment director hauled us into his office and said, all right, boys, it's so obvious you guys have never played together before. True. Because when we saw the gig opportunity, we said, oh, we got to get this, right? So we just grouped together. We'd never worked together before.
Yeah.
And we locked ourselves in the basement of the drummer. And we locked ourselves into his basement and we learned 50 songs in a week. So we'd never played together, but we didn't.
Everybody can play a song, but playing it together is
together,
a whole different thing.
Yeah, way. Yeah. So he says, you obviously haven't played together before. The gaps between the songs, you got to cut those out. And you got to get people on the dance floor. And if you can't do that within a week, you're out. We're shipping you back to Canada. Whoa.
Yeah.
We just went, what? No, we're no way. We're going back. I mean, we all quit school. We were all studying jazz.
Okay.
We were all in the jazz program at Humber College.
Oh, nice.
So we all quit our schooling to go do this gig. So there was no way we were going to be shipped back to Canada with our tails between our legs and
right.
people saying, what happened?
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So we had a meeting and we sat down and we said, and this is I'm saying all this because that's the moment for me and the rest of the guys where we understood our job as musicians is not to get up there and be cool and do our thing. It's to entertain people, right? And we have to get them on the dance floor and we have to get them involved. And so we had a meeting. We drew out set lists so that we knew exactly what song we're going to do next. And that way everything was snappy, one song to the next. And we just got tighter and tighter. And at the end of the week, the director hauled us in his office and said, congratulations, boys, you're staying for the full 5 months contract, right? So that's where it really started. And you can imagine that you're doing the same sets over and over again for 5 months. It starts to get boring for us as the musicians on the stage. So we started turning to each other and just having silly fun. Like I remember one night we had toilet paper. We taped toilet paper from the low ceiling and just had them draped all along the stage just for
fun.
Just for something to do, right?
Right,
for fun and laughs, right?
That's cool.
And so when I went solo and I'm standing on stage, now I got nobody on stage to play with, to have any fun with. So I think it was a natural thing for me to kind of go out to the audience to get that same playful interaction so that it makes it more fun, not only for them, but for me as well. Because I don't like sitting in a bar and just watching somebody play one cover. I mean, it may sound nice, but to have the audience interact with you, that's another level.
Right. Oh, right? For sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'll remember that.
And one of my clients here in Orangeville told me after one of my shows, I think I'd been there like 3 or 4 years already. And he said, Tom, when you come in, the whole audience, the room is singing along. There's dancing. There's clapping. There's people coming up to sing. There's somebody playing tambourine. And so what happens is people leave after your show and they talk about my place.
Right.
Because they've now been a part of the event.
Right. Okay.
And so that helps to spread the word for his room. So I've discovered that people not only go there if they like the food, they're not going to go there just when I'm playing, but they also go there because they like the food, right?
Right. I also noticed with your show, you go around, you remember everybody's name. Have you always been able to do that, or is it something that you kind of train yourself to be able to do? Because that's tough. I go into any new area and I meet new people. There could be two people in front of me. I still remember their names.
Yeah.
So that's just a gift.
In 2001, a friend of mine who owns a company called Adventure Canada, and they run expeditions on a small 100-passenger ship in the Arctic, west coast of Greenland, Iceland, and the Canadian Arctic. And so he told me, why don't you come and be the musician on board one of these trips? And I was like, yeah, of course. So my very first trip with Adventure Canada, we landed in Iceland on September 11, 2001.
Wow.
6 hours before the tragedy in New York City, right? So it was a very memorable date for me and a very memorable first trip with Adventure Canada. But that is a whole other different story.
Right.
I noticed that everybody was having trouble remembering everybody else's names. There's 100 passengers on the ship. So that's when I thought, gee, I wonder if I could learn 100 passengers, because we're not seeing anybody new.
Right.
It's the same people over and over again for about 10 days. I thought, I wonder if it's possible to learn everybody's name. So I just started trying it, you know, and just over and over again. And it's sheer repetition. And, you know, after like maybe 5 days, I got it, 5 or 6 days, I got everybody's names, and that was kind of cool. And then as the years progressed and more trips, I started to see, can I shorten the time down? And I was able to get it down to 4 days and then 3 days, 100 passengers. And then on the second night on the ship, we have what's called the captain's dinner, where before we all go into the dining room, we're all sitting in the lounge, and the captain introduces his staff, the hotel manager, the chief engineer, and people like that on his team. So after he introduces everybody, I had the idea that I should introduce all the passengers back to the captain.
Yeah.
And my buddy who owns the company said, that's great.
That's amazing.
That's a great idea, right?
Oh, man.
So now I have 48 hours to learn 100 passengers' names, right? So as soon as I start meeting them at the hotel in Ottawa on the night before we fly out, I'm starting to learn names. I'm starting like, oh, hello, and your name is Michael? Okay, and you're Sandy, and you're Bob, and you're Sheila, and you're – and then I would just go around the lobby, the hotel lobby, and just constantly
– really?
Okay, oh, you're Sheila, and meet them 4 or 5 times to try and hammer it in, right?
Wow.
It got to the point where Adventure Canada staff, they would see me do it, and, oh, Tom's doing his thing again.
Yeah.
Right? And then the ship upgraded to a 200-passenger ship. And I got phone calls from Adventure Canada staff saying, what are you going to do now, hotshot? You think you're going to get it now? And, you know, why do I do it? Because as an entertainer, I quickly saw the value of knowing everybody's names in the audience. Because there's nothing like having an entertainer up there call your name out.
Yep. But I want to talk about where the idea of your show came. You know, everything kind of shuts down. How did that idea first kind of come to mind? And how, like, it was obviously a great experience because you had lots of viewers from all over the world.
Like every other musician, in March of 2020, I had a record number of gigs. And literally overnight, all gone.
Wow.
I'm almost in tears as I even talk about it now. It really hit hard, you know, because that's your bread and butter. That's how I'm paying my bills. That's how I'm meeting my obligations in the house, my financial obligations in the house. And it was scary. I mean, I'd never done an online show before. And then one of my clients, they asked, would you be willing to do an online show for our, you know, for our people? Thank God for my IT background. Because you can just imagine all the technical details that have to be dealt with to put on an online show. And
for sure.
Lord knows I spent hours, and I mean hours, trying to work out all the technical details as I learned how to do this.
Right.
But I put on this online show for them. And at the time, I didn't know how to put it on only for them. So it was a wide open show to the public, but they were the only ones that were told about it. But what happens in Facebook, as you well know, is that people get notices saying, hey, Tom Kovach went live. And so as I'm doing the show for these people from Friday Harbor, suddenly I'm noticing somebody from Australia, somebody from Europe, somebody from South America. I'm like, what is going on? Like, and that's when I went, how do I get in touch with somebody from Australia while doing live shows in Ontario, right?
Right.
That's when I decided I gotta do this, you know. And not only for that, but also because of the source of income, some source of
for
income.
For sure, yeah.
And it turned out to be a nice little source of income.
Good, it helps.
Through PayPal and and other tips that way. And so I've been doing it every week for about a year and a half, and it's just lately I went to once a month.
Right.
The first Sunday of every month.
Right.
Because the live shows are just so they're ramping up so much.
Absolutely,
that I need to kind of watch my voice and make sure I have –
Right. For the and that's such great news to hear. But live shows are ramping back up. How does it feel?
Yeah, I'm dancing for joy. I'm going into shops and buying things again. Yeah. I'm making money. You know, it's like, it's great.
That's good. For anyone that maybe hasn't been to your show, what would you say? Like, you know, what can they look forward to when they come and check you out here in Dufferin County?
Get ready to be asked to play the tambourine or to come up and sing. Make a request from my request book. I have over 350 songs. Yeah, it's just a lively show. I've always said there's two levels of magic at my shows. The first level is when I have complete strangers who've never seen me before start playfully we exchange playful teasing comments with each other.
Yeah.
And it happens time and time again. The second level is when complete strangers start exchanging playful teasing comments with each other and I'm not involved anymore. But I'm kind of like the catalyst for that, right?
Absolutely.
So it's a really fun evening to have a good time and to forget about this bloody nonsense that
absolutely
in the past 2 years.
What do you got coming up for live shows and where can we find you?
Stone Corner Pub in Pickering on Friday, April 22nd. And then the Black Birch Restaurant on April 23rd. Love playing there. That's a great, great room.
When are you back in Orangeville? When's your next couple in Orangeville?
April 23rd at the Black Birch.
Awesome. Thank you very much for coming in today, Thomas. I appreciate it. And all the best.
Nick, thank you so very much.
Absolutely.
Love talking about myself. Thank you very much for listening.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Thomas.
Yeah.